It's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown, out there on the prairie. Spring has finally arrived, and the crocuses are up, and the flowers are up, and there's green grass, and people are hanging their sheets out on the lawn just for the smell of it, just for the beauty of it, the smell of grass and the smell of flowers and the smell of fresh, wet sheets. Stand out there and take a deep breath and enjoy. There's still ice out on the lake, and there was a full moon this last week, and the full moon makes fishermen crazy. So even though there's still ice on the lake and they dare not take their boats out, nonetheless, this drive to get out there and fish, they're crazy people. Donnie Krebsbach put his toboggan out on the ice, soft ice, and he wrapped three life preservers around him. And he pushed himself out onto the ice. He was out about 25, 30 feet, people yelling at him not to do that. And he was fishing, and he had the bad luck to catch a smallmouth bass, and it was a big fish, and it pulled him out. It pulled him slowly, grinding over the ice. It pulled him out about 100 feet before he had the good sense to snip that line. And now he had to get himself turned around on loose, soft ice and make his way back. It took him a long time, visions of death. But did he learn anything from this? No, he did not. He climbed up in a tree with an overhanging limb, and though it was a skinny limb for a big man and it bent under his weight, he was up there fishing away. This is craziness. You and I, we would be too bored to ever do such a thing. The thought of sitting in a boat for hours with silent men who glare at you if you so much as clear your throat. Nobody would do this. It's an affliction. It's a disease, the addiction to fishing. And I mention this because Lubbock is a place where Midwesterners with fishing dependencies come to do rehab. They come down here. Too many lakes up in Minnesota, too much water up there. To addicted fishermen, Minnesota is like what Las Vegas is to drinkers. It's Alcoholics Unanimous. And so fishermen come down to Lubbock to dry out, and they learn other pleasures. They learn to go to Bible study, and they learn to eat breakfast tacos, and they learn not to complain about the heat. Don't complain about this. It's the same for everybody. Just as you don't complain about the cold in Minnesota, and you don't complain about it getting dark at night, and you don't complain about your back aching. Just be with the others. Don't be so original. It's that time of year when children in the school get wound up somehow. There's something in the air, pheromones or pollen or something, that just starts to activate children, and they're operating at high speed anyway. The tremendous energy in children that drive you crazy sometimes. My daughter is 15 years old, and she goes from 7 o'clock in the morning until 10 o'clock at night, just full speed. And in order to get her to go to bed before midnight, we have to turn the clocks forward. So we have no social life, my wife and I, because we go directly from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. just in order to try and get this child to lie down. Children are that way, and teachers know that. In the month of May, trying to get all these kids to focus and pull in one direction is practically impossible. It's like trying to herd hummingbirds. To have a class full of children, and the windows are open, and they smell the air, and it gets them going. It's that time of year when college students have to think about coming back home and getting a summer job. The Inquist boy, Christopher, came back. He's at Grinnell down in Iowa, came back to Lake Wobegon, and he went up to Ralph. Ralph's pretty good grocery, and he asked for a job. And Ralph said, sure, you come back this summer, and you can stock the shelves. And so this boy, who is a brilliant student down at Grinnell and who has developed his critical skills to where he's written this brilliant, scathing paper about anti-intellectualism in small-town America, is going to come back now, and he's going to work this summer in Ralph's, putting cans of navy beans on a shelf and stamping the little price tag on them. This boy who quotes from Thorsten Veblen in his paper and who quotes from Henry David Thoreau, the mass of men lead lives of desperation. What we call resignation is confirmed desperation. It is a characteristic of wisdom not to do desperate things, and who applied it to his own hometown is now going to come back and work because he needs to have a job in order to hold the respect of the mother of Jessica, who is his girlfriend, who is the most beautiful girl at Grinnell. She lives in Chicago. And it's not his good looks that impresses the mother. It's his good manners and it's his good habits. It's the letter that he wrote to Jessica a few weeks ago after he'd come home for spring break. And he helped his Uncle Floyd with maple syruping. His Uncle Floyd is old, he's 72, and he lost a finger cutting kindling for the fire to boil down the sap. It takes 40 gallons of maple sap to make 1 gallon of syrup, and you have to watch the fires closely. He's tapping 200 trees. And so this boy came back for spring break, and he worked hard carrying 5 gallon pails of sap down to the big drum that sat over the fire and boiling it down. And you have to do this day and night. He took his shift and he helped his uncle because his uncle had lost the index finger of his left hand. He'd been chopping kindling and he was exhausted, the old man was. And he was distracted as he was splitting a log by his dog who was barking. And he looked up and saw that the neighbor's bull was leaning against the fence trying to get at his cow who was in heat. And he yelled at the bull, and the bull wouldn't go away, and he grabbed a 2x4 and shook it at him, and the bull didn't pay any attention. And he went ahead and he split the piece of wood, but there was a knot in the wood, and Floyd always has very sharp axes. And he sliced off that index finger, and it fell down in the snow. And he picked it up, and he took it into the garage, and he duct taped it back onto the stump, and he was going to drive to the hospital, but then he had to call the neighbor to tell him to do something about his bull, and he only got voicemail, and so he had to bring the cow back into the barn, which was hard. That hand hurt, and then he had to get in his car, and the roads were icy, and he skidded off into the ditch. And he discovered that people don't pick up hitchhikers so readily, especially an old man who's waving to them to stop. And by the time they got to the hospital, it was almost too late, but they sewed it on anyway. But it was numb. He had no feeling in it, and he could hardly move that finger. Nonetheless, it's there, though it tingles in an odd sort of way. So Christopher came to help him. And he stayed that whole week of spring break, and then he stayed an extra week after that because his uncle is such a good man who gives away all of his maple syrup to people. He never sells it to anybody. He wrote a long letter to Jessica, his girlfriend, about his uncle, and her mother saw the letter and read it several times. And now she trusts Christopher enough to let the two of them go off on their own and take little weekend trips together. This is a privilege that you have to work for, don't you see? This is something that you're brought up with in Lake Wobegon. We raise our children to be good children, even if it stifles their independence just a little bit. We have independent people. We have characters in this town. We've got five of them. That's about as many as anybody needs. Myrtle Krebsbach is there. She stood up during a meeting of the Thanatopsis Club this last week, and she sang, "I don't want to set the world on fire. I just want to start a flame in your heart." And she was dancing and flouncing around, though she is 76 years old. Actually, 76 is just kind of a holding pattern until God calls her home, and then we'll find out how old she really is. She's a performer. She's a born performer. She's an iconoclast. Mr. Berge is another one. He's riding around the other day when the snow melted on his three-wheeler, and he's got his yellow hazard jacket on with the stop painted on the back in red duct tape, and he's got four flags flying from his cap, two American and two Norwegian, and he's got bumper stickers all over him. This man is a character. He's an individual. And we like that because it shows us vividly what a beautiful thing being ordinary is. What a sweet thing it is. Christopher wrote in his paper about anti-intellectualism in small town America, he wrote about lawn care, which he described as a neurotic, compulsive activity. It was make work, but it's not. It's a beautiful ritual of spring, and everybody is engaged in it now in Lake Wobegon. They're out picking up dog manure off the grass. They're out raking, and they're poking the dirt to stimulate the grass, to get a lawn which is almost perfect, just like everyone else's, so that we're all bound together, doing the same thing at the same time. This is a precious, precious thing. It's not neurotic whatsoever. It's the way that you remember your father and remember when you were a little child and you helped your father rake and mow and poke around in the dirt and plant flowers and trees. It's a way of remembering your father, your little boy, once again, when you work on your lawn. And now other little boys are with you and they're your boys. And on life goes. It doesn't have anything to do with compulsion. It has to do with simplicity and elegance and beauty. Junk and grunge and a mess, those are about yesterday. But the beautiful lawn, the grass, so temporary, Scripture tells us. The lawn, the beautiful grass that we're making, that's about today, this moment, this beautiful moment in Lake Wobegon. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good-looking, and all the children are above average.